people's expectations of who is a good employee or why is this person a bad employee. I think that's fraught with people have bad perspectives on people sometimes, and they think that it's all very high stress. Like, again, I have to do this quickly. And you don't actually step back and realize, like, okay, what are we doing that is putting this person in a bad position? Can we deal with their different approaches or their different strengths? You know, that's the thing I think that's frustrating to see a lot of companies just fail on that over and over again.
Welcome to Scaling Software Teams, a weekly podcast to help software leaders navigate fast growth without losing the magic that made that growth possible. I'm your host, Wes Winham. Today, we're joined by Zach Holman. Zach Holman was employee number 9 at GitHub. Along with being one of their earliest engineers, he's a well-known speaker. You've probably seen his presentations on things like how GitHub works. Since leaving GitHub, Zach has made several angel investments, and he's founded a secretive startup called Signed. In this episode, we talk about a hard subject, firing and getting fired. We also cover why your onboarding process may be to blame if you have high turnover, and we cover the next steps you should take after letting someone go. Right now, we're in a challenging period for engineering leaders. I'm dedicating time to answer questions about engineering leadership. If you have questions about building and managing teams, remote or otherwise, email me at wes@woventeams.com. Again, that's wes@woventeams.com. I'm happy to help. And now, here's my conversation with Zach Holman. Zach, thank you so much for joining us today on Scaling Software Teams. So you wrote a blog post and a talk on getting fired and firing that I love to read because I think it's a topic we don't talk about enough. Why is firing fast maybe not the best advice?
So you can see a lot of people will say that as advice. And like you can see why they say it, especially in like startups and tech fields and stuff, because we're all about moving fast. And you got to go fast. And you know, there's this company out there that will kill you unless you do everything as fast as possible, which, you know, I never really see evidence of that being the case anyway. But so we kind of think that like, yeah, you know, we hear all the horror stories of we've had, you know, this person on board with us for a long time and they're culturally toxic and all these bad things, which are legitimate concerns. But I don't know. It's one of those things, one of many things in the tech field that people kind of forget about the actual human being. And, you know, there are a lot of cases where, you know, I know a lot of people who start out on a bad footing, you know, just don't get a good start like they should. And then, you know, if you fire fast, you could end up losing somebody who could also ultimately be very good for your company to have. So I don't know. That's most of my kind of position is just push back on the idea that you can treat human beings like some sort of object in a game or a programming language or something like that. And you just got to like position the pieces and everything. It's like, it's a lot more complicated than that.
So if, let's say I've recently hired someone, I am bought in, I want to treat people like people, but things are not going like I'd like on onboarding. Expectation being missed, which, you know, maybe it's my expectation, maybe it's the onboarding. What are some heuristics you've used in the past to kind of help get some clarity on whether this is the time to fire fast or write it out?
Yeah, it's weird how things change over time too. You know, one of the things that I kind of think back on a lot is we hired somebody when I was at GitHub, and we were a very small company at the time. And at the time, we were kind of just sort of, hi, you've been hired. Here's the access to the code. Go, which is when you're 10 or 20 people, that kind of makes sense. But the person we hired was kind of new to the industry and we're really figuring out a lot of things and need a lot more direction. And things didn't work out. So we ended up having to fire them. But I think that's more of an indictment in our own abilities to communicate with the person and see that they were having problems. And, you know, how do we fix that before we get to that point? The strange thing about that story is, you know, a couple of years later, the company hired him again. He's been there for 6 years now, 7, 8 years or something. Like it's strange how that sort of works out. And like, you know, clearly he got better as an employee, but the company changed dramatically and was able to sort of support different types of people than what you may be able to support when you're a 5-person company or something like that. So people's expectations of who is a good employee or why is this person a bad employee, I think that's fraught with people have bad perspectives on people sometimes, and they think that it's all very high stress. Like, again, I have to do this quickly. And you don't actually step back and realize, like, okay, what are we doing that is putting this person in a bad position? Can we deal with their different approaches or their different strengths? And, you know, that's the thing I think it's frustrating to see a lot of companies just fail on that over and over again.
So I want to talk about avoiding surprises in firing. So maybe, do you want to tell a little bit your story, how you were fired and had a little bit of a surprise?
Kind of the backstory, like I've been at GitHub for a long time. GitHub had been going through a lot of changes because I was the ninth employee, and it was around like 300 or so at that point. And we had gone from the whole spectrum of not only no managers, but we hate managers and never here and stuff like that, to, well, this isn't working super well, we should have some managers, to, we have a bunch of managers, they're all pretty terrible, to, you know, okay, look, we should actually worry about management and getting it better and stuff like that. So it's been a huge swing for those, you know, the last 2 or 3 years in particular. And, you know, at the same time, I was going through a bunch of depression and burnout and kind of the whole things that you might expect from being in a company that had gone through all these changes and successes and failures and all that sort of stuff. There's a lot of like little things that are very obvious to me in hindsight. I basically went from having no manager to getting assigned a manager who was managing a team of 12. She'd just been hired. She was also going through learning kind of the company and everything. And all 12 people on her team, nobody worked with each other. So it was like kind of a strictly hierarchical, we're going to dump these last 12 or 14 or something underneath her purview. I had one-on-one with her, and she was just kind of like, this is probably not going to be helpful for us. So just let me know if you need anything. Otherwise, we just really won't talk. And I was just kind of like, that's fine. You know, I can just build whatever I want. And that's cool. So that was like 8 or 9 months prior. And then eventually I went on sabbatical for a couple of months. And then when I came back, they fired me, which is a very strange set of circumstances. I had one-on-one conversation with her. And then, you know, 9 months later, no contact. I can see it looking back because I was kind of the earlier employee who had strong opinions, as I normally do, trying to figure out like how do we build product and stuff like that. And as the whole company was going through all these different changes and friction and everything, I think it was just sort of obvious in hindsight, like why I got the axe, and like, I'm not too fretting about it. I like to kind of think back and realize everybody who was involved with firing me got fired like 6 months later. I don't know. It's one of those things where you look back and it's a really weird set of circumstances anyway. I think it was involved with bad management, with bad, you know, my relationship with my manager was just bad.
At this point, you hadn't really had a manager before, or had you had a manager you had a really good relationship? Okay. I think it's like being managed is also kind of a skill, I think.
And like, I see that a lot, especially in startups and stuff, where I'm already like churning through my head of all the stories and people I've met and stuff. I meet like a 22-year-old or something who had been at the company for a year, which is ancient in that, you know, 2-year-old company. And now they were facing managing like 4 people and stuff. And they're like, yeah, you know, the company sent me to a retreat and I learned about things for a couple of weeks. And, you know, I feel pretty confident that I can deal with all my reports. And the whole time I'm just kind of sitting here like, this is not a good thing. You know, it takes a really long time and a certain skill set to be comfortable with the type of conversations that you need to have both up and down the hierarchy. And it's just, it's strange. Again, not surprising, I guess, with all of the, you know, we need to go fast. And it's an awkward position because if somebody is your kind of star developer and stuff, and you suddenly bring in somebody from outside who may have more experiences like a manager or executive or something, it is kind of awkward to be like, wow, should I feel slighted? Like, how do I react to this? But I don't know. I think that also conflates the idea of what is prestige in a company. Is management viewed as control and power in an organization, or is it just another kind of tool set with different qualities that good managers have? And I think a lot of the struggles between why developers don't like management in general stems from the idea of like, oh, who's actually controlling me and the projects that I'm on, versus It should just be like, who can help facilitate what we're all trying to build here? But I think a lot of companies who are new with all these sorts of things just don't run into that. But, you know, everybody eventually learns. Some just learn when it's really, really a disaster down the line.
Charity Majors, she says that if you're going to do engineering management, you should buckle up for 2 years, like a 2-year commitment, because you will suck at it no matter who you are for at least the first year. And it takes about that long to rewire your brain. And I really like I struggle with that as well. Like rewiring, is me going to this meeting important, or is me merging in this pull request important?
Do you think your brain can be rewired that way?
I think it's tough to be like change your predilections towards empathy and towards like people versus things. I think we're mostly kind of stuck there. The only thing I see is people get better at, I'm here speaking about engineers who are typically things oriented, not people oriented. They sit down, they want to talk about an idea or a tool. I think it's more like you start seeing the human system, the humans as a system that you know, they're humans, they're not a system, they're real people, but that becomes like an engineering problem. Like when I hear, like I talk to the head of engineering at Zapier, the way he talks about career ladders and onboarding, it's like, it's just this distributed system problem that he is now really good at. I think that's like what I aspire to, at least. I don't know if I want to change myself, but like bring a new set of skills.
It's also one of those things where the really good ones that I know would also say that, like, oh, I'm terrible at this, or, you know, I'm not as good as I should be. And it's like, you're amazing. You know, how do you, I think that's also just an innate human talent. It's also, I think it's a good principle to kind of go by of if somebody's really confident in their management techniques or something, maybe that's a warning sign. You know, all of the best people I know that do this sort of stuff are always still asking themselves, can I learn more? Can I learn a different aspect of this? And yeah, I guess that's kind of a general human thing in general too, across everything.
I think there are domains where there's not enough complexity and you could be really confident. I don't think management is one of those. I think you're totally right. I think I might like want a more confident surgeon, maybe. I'm trying to think where's the line versus like, I don't know anything about
or something.
Yeah. I don't know anything about surgery. This is, you know, I learn something new every day. It's like, but like just, you know, people who do distributed system stuff, they're like, this stuff's going to break. I don't know what's going to happen. It's going to break. I'm going to build resilience. I feel like that mindset lends itself well to management, but I don't know. Like 12 is the biggest team I've ever managed. So I'm still trying to figure it out.
Even putting it that frame is still a little bit frightening because, you know, things are going to break, which is true. You're also talking about like people and, you know, families and lives and stuff.
It's a tough balance because you will fail. Like there's no way to say you won't fail. Like if you do, you're just kidding yourself. So Zach, if I'm on the path with an employee, I think firing is in the cards. What are some things I can do to make that a humane, respectful process?
I think one thing is to be at least aware that, you know, your actions actually impact people very differently. I talked to somebody a few years back and they had started a startup, and I think there were maybe around 20 headcount at that point or something like that. And they ended up having to fire somebody. And kind of went through the process and like, yeah, you know, this is going to work out and stuff like that. On the way out of the office, the newly fired employee like met up with the founder or something on the way out. And the founder was like, you know, bring it in, you know, let's hug this out or something like that. And the employee was like, no. And, you know, he was relaying this story to me and he's just like, you know, until we kind of like, he had read my blog post and had, he said it really opened his eyes, and he was, when he had fired that employee, he just didn't really understand the impact that firing somebody actually has on somebody. And I was just sitting here like horrified. I'm like, you didn't even realize that this changes people's financial stability or healthcare or, you know, whatever the case is. He was young and had never been through that. That's kind of like a lot of the other thing that I look forward to in a company is just, what have you done in your past? Have you been fired in the past? Have you had to make these bad, horrible decisions? Are you going to treat this with kind of a seriousness that's relevant to, you know, my livelihood? And I think that's, you know, just a really important thing to consider the entire time. And I think that impacts everything. So once you actually have an understanding that, yeah, this, you know, this can impact not just this person's life, but their family or their extended family or their friends or whatever the case is, it changes how you approach the problem. So talk to somebody early and say, this is, you know, you're not quite meeting our expectations. Can we do something to change this? Can we help you out or something like that? Because that does two things. Like one, either somebody's going to, you know, change their behavior and then become an excellent employee, or two, they say, I don't know, that's not really what I want to do, or I disagree with that or something like that. And at least that's known. And then you can either, you know, hopefully help them kind of transition out of the company or help them find another job or, you know, whatever the case is. I think you need to be pretty empathetic, even if bad things happen and somebody either quits or gets fired, or that shouldn't be the end of your relationship with this person, because it goes beyond just here's your paycheck. Once you're out of the company, you're out. Like that's, I don't think that's helpful for both sides of the table either.
What does it look like to be taking it seriously?
Just know like the consequences. And again, something as I was just thinking, it's not just consequences between you and them. It's also the consequences of the team that they're on, because there is a lot of, I think a lot of people kind of undervalue how much of an impact that can be on the team, because the number of times when one or maybe two people get fired on a team, I would get like IMs from somebody like, oh, am I next? Like, what have you heard? You know, and people start having this type of fear, which is a very normal thing. But then again, like that's kind of the don't surprise people sort of thing. So if somebody knows a month or a couple weeks or whatever ahead of time that they may be on the bubble or start thinking about things differently, then it becomes less surprising for the rest of your employees too. And then they can start saying, oh, well, it's just them or something, or, you know, I can help them out or something. It's not like if it's just out of the blue, man, I could be in the next Monday or the next Friday out of the blue too. And that changes everything with like how I approach my job. So TLDR, everything's really hard.
So does that mean you're a fan of performance improvement plans and kind of the formalized system?
I think so. They get a lot of shit for like people, I think for a good reason, because I know a lot of people like flat out have told me, yeah, at our company, if you're put on a PIP, you're out. They just don't know that yet. Basically, it's a way of getting people out in the next month or whatever. But I still think it's important because, man, there are a lot of times when somebody just has a bad couple months, or they have things going on at home that you just don't even know about and stuff, or they just have different expectations of what your expectations are. So at least getting an idea of, you know, this is what we want for you. And even if it's a small amount of chance that like I can retain my job, at least I think it's an important thing to go to. And of course, all of this stuff shouldn't even be a surprise. Like a PIP shouldn't be a surprise either, because you should be having conversations the entire time, the whole duration of your employment, about like, you know, how am I doing? How am I not doing? And all that sort of stuff. So it's always amazing to me that people get put on PIPs and they get surprised if they have like a management hierarchy in place. And it's like, it's the whole point of having a manager is to adjust you as you go type of thing.
So useful, even if sometimes they're a formalized process for getting someone out, at least they check that seriousness criteria maybe. Or what are some things, as good as any company you've worked with, done a good job of cultivating that relationship after employees are gone?
GitLab, for example, does have at least some sort of place in their Slack and you know, some sort of process involved of at least keeping communication together. Because I know it's like, it's easy to kind of say, oh, you know, out of sight, out of mind, but it isn't. In America, I have to deal with healthcare. I have to deal with, you know, all these, you know, stock issues. Like I just finished my relationship with GitHub 2 weeks ago, and I've been out of the company for 5 years, but like that was the last tie of some stock related stuff where I can finally just be like, yeah, I'm done, you know? And it's just from a strictly logistical standpoint, you're tied yourself to these people for quite some time. So I think it's at the very least have like an alumni at your company.com email account, because, you know, for the first 6 months when I was out of GitHub, I could talk to pretty much anybody. I know, you know, where people were working and what level to talk to. After 12 months, 18 months, more and more people leave the company or get promoted or move around, and I just have no idea how to talk to somebody. And they'll be like, you know, my health insurance is running out soon. Like, I need to talk to somebody and, you know, just direct me and stuff. So it's like, it's a little bit goes a really long way. And, you know, we've had a lot of people who left GitHub and then subsequently went back a year or two later or something, or got another job there. Or, you know, the number one thing is that is an incredible network of people to tap into to hire future people at the company. Because the number of times, oh man, it's probably been, I don't know, hundreds at this point over the years of people ask me like, oh, should I work there? You know, would you recommend me working there and stuff? And like, we get asked that all the time, and we can be like a strong referral network or a strong anti-referral, whatever that is, you know? So I think it's all just really important just in terms of just sheer logistics and keeping sure that like all of the financial healthcare, all that sort of stuff is figured out. But also in terms of just hiring, in terms of keeping that connection together, especially like in tech, even though I may not work at, you know, say GitHub anymore, I may still work on some of the open source projects, or we may be in the same conferences and meetups and stuff like that. And, you know, I always thought it would be a company that has a really good alumni network, I think this can be a pretty lucrative thing for a lot of different reasons.
I love the alumni at mailing group. That seems like a really easy step that could make a big difference. I'd love to talk, switch a little bit more about hiring, since you brought up the alumni network as a hiring problem. Why is hiring kind of a dumpster fire right now in tech?
I think it's mostly just stems from ignorance, for lack of a good word. One is the interview process in particular. We are in like a tech company. If I push something to a repository, pretty much everyone in the company can look at that code and help me improve it and help me fix it before it becomes a problem. With interviewing, it gets weird because there's like, yeah, privacy for the candidate, but there's also a weird privacy for like my coworker. And I've seen this a few times where it's like, oh yeah, you go off in this meeting room and you talk to this person for half an hour and then you come back and you write about stuff. But like, nobody, like, there's a weird hands off of like, oh, I don't want to be in the room with you because it's your own process of determining if this is a person is going to be successful here. But that's weird. It's like one of the few things in at least tech where it's kind of like a black box, and you end up, I think, with a lot of people who think that they're really good interviewers and nobody's there to tell them, wow, you could have done this a lot better. Or, you know, this question's illegal to ask, like things like that. I've seen that a whole bunch too. And it's, you know, people don't treat hiring with the same amount of care, even as they do firing, which is a strange sort of thing in our culture, I guess.
So that, in the interview process, just the black box of the one-on-one interview is one of the big drivers of the, let's say, less than optimal nature of hiring.
How do we improve ourselves? You know, like a lot of interviewing is, I would say, the candidate doesn't have a lot of responsibility. Like they do. It's important for them to put their best foot forward and stuff. But like, I think a lot of the problems right now is just companies not having good processes, and they're not improving, you know, how can we become better interviewers? How do we figure out if this is a good person or not? Those are like, I think the easiest gains that you can have with the smallest amount of effort type of thing. And then you can go into a lot more detail there in terms of, you know, is whiteboard coding helpful? You know, is pair programming a better thing? You know, how do we deal with, again, if you want to be stereotypical, kind of introverted developers and stuff who may be nervous in general talking to you, but when it comes to getting a new job, may be incredibly nervous and don't come off well. And, you know, I think it's our job as companies and people in hiring positions to figure out like, okay, how do we relax that candidate as much as possible so I can actually see what they're doing and they can do the job or not? There's such a power imbalance at play between me, who can do everything and decide whether to hire you or not, and you, who has not a lot of cards on the table. Yeah, I think a lot in tech, you'll have sort of like, oh, this is the questions that we ask, you know, a candidate, or this is where I'll have them go on the whiteboard and do this sort of thing. And you're already putting yourself in a position of strength because I know the answer and you don't. Versus I really appreciate pair programming stuff. If we're going to solve this problem together, you as the interviewer don't necessarily know how you're going to fix this line of code or this bug or whatever, and you're collaborating on how do we fix this line of code and do this stuff better. I think that's a much, just from a strictly power dynamics thing, I think that puts us on the same equal footing, which is how, you know, hopefully we build this once, you know, we've hired the person and they're on board, because we're all equals trying to figure out what the hell do we do with this code. I kind of wish there was a part in an interview where I could just watch them in Slack for a week or something, because most of the people I talk to are via Slack and pull requests and stuff. So why do I really care if they can't talk out loud in a meeting room about how to do something on a code base that they've never seen before? There's clearly a lot of things that I think can be improved with hiring in tech, and how do we make it just a better process in general?
So you would advocate more pair programming on problems that are real problems that maybe the interviewer also doesn't know the answer to. So there's more level footing. And then maybe in the interview, if you could see how someone slacks, how someone interacts on pull requests asynchronously, you think that might move us in a better direction?
Yeah, I think it's a matter of just being more humble and realistic. Like, we all have really fond ideas of how great we are, and that one time when we made this, you know, model that was beautiful and the code is great and stuff. And it's like, if you actually look at your job, it's usually just crap of like, I got to generate this code and fix this terrible bug I introduced myself last week. And it's not glamorous. And it's very easy as like interviewers to be like, oh, I'm going to come up with a question that's, you know, really elegant and, you know, really put them on the spot. And that's going to tell me what they're going to do. And it's like, the number of times I actually work on a problem that way in my job is like once a year, something that's really hard and tricky. And most of it's just writing silly code and hoping that it works and stuff. So I think it's people getting down off their high horse and realizing, you know, how do I test them on actual problems that we have today versus imaginary problems that we might have eventually or never.
So a steel man for the everyone should get the same problem, maybe it's pair programming or maybe it's, you know, async, is that we get to control a little bit for the situation where I'm working on a live bug. I might have an easier bug that day, so I might get a more positive impression of the candidate, or it might be biased in some other way. So we've got more variables moving in order to achieve that. Well, at least we both don't know the answer.
Yeah, I think it's a reasonable trade-off, just because you'll hear this a lot when you're trying to interview somebody and say, oh, I don't care about the answer. I care about how you attack the problem. And, you know, I think you can still get a lot out of how somebody attacks a really simplistic problem, or just, you know, this is a bug that I need to fix anyway in my day to day. How would you tackle this? And, you know, hopefully between you working with this person and getting an idea for how their brain operates and wraps around problems, both big and small and everything. And, you know, hopefully the other people on your team who are interviewing as well, you'll eventually have an idea of, you know, how this person works. I think it's clearly variable in terms of, you know, sometimes somebody may get a better question or that's more suited for them or something. But at the end of the day, we're trying to make binary decisions on human beings, which are cover the whole spectrum and stuff. So I guess we're just trying to control for that as best as we can and go from there.
My guest today has been Zach Coleman. Zach, thank you for joining us today on Scaling Software Teams. Thanks again to Zach for sharing his experience with us. Here are a couple takeaways I had from our chat. Number one, fire humanely. The most important rule for firing humanely is to avoid surprises. We should not be afraid of PIPs, performance improvement plans. They help ensure that we're not surprising people. We need to remember that our actions affect real people with real lives and families, and this is a big deal. This is not a time to try to hug it out. We need to understand that for the other person, they might need some space. It takes a toll. We need to understand that impact. It's also best to not let this be the end of your relationship. Once you're out is a pretty lame tactic. So reaching out a day later, a week later, a month later can go a long way. Number two, iterate your onboarding process to improve your hiring success rate. Bad onboarding is highly correlated with firing. If we're seeing a high turnover, it's likely an onboarding problem just as much as it's a hiring problem. Onboarding should be treated as much as a product that's iterated on as our actual product. The best companies are really aggressive towards fixing the root cause of problems with early employees, which is usually onboarding. Number three, create an alumni group. This aligns with firing and not letting that be the last action. If things end well, ex-employees can be a great source for referrals and they can be advocates. We can actively engage them. An easy way to do this is to create a Slack group and invite ex-employees, alumni, to that group. Some companies have no contribution to these alumni groups. They're controlled by other folks. So why not control yours? Start it. Seed the communication. Don't let it be out of sight, out of mind. Thanks again to Zach for coming on the show. Now, I want to hear from you. If you have any questions about growing a team, remote or otherwise, please email me at wes@woventeams.com. I read every email personally, and I'm excited to help you work on your problem. Until next week, keep on scaling.